Accessing.
All this year, we will be featuring a product of the week. So be sure to look within the description of each and every podcast this TV season and click through those links. Whenever you purchase an item through our links, each purchase helps our network grow, and we're able to keep the lights on within the studio.
Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire!
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now!
All right, hello. We are here, Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am the captain, and I am on the bridge with my first officer. You know what? Let's make this appropriate. I'm stuck in the turbo lift with my first officer, David. Hello, Dave.
Hello. How's it going?
How much longer until I can get out of here? I don't like being this close to you for too long.
Should we play 20 questions?
Or we can start singing and dancing. All right, so today, Dave, that's right, you and I are going to be discussing and breaking down the new season of Star Trek Short Treks, and I just want to say right off the bat that I'm happy this is a permanent thing.
100% agree.
I was thinking that it was just going to be kind of like a gimmick for last year to help promote the show, but no, it looks like it's going to be an ongoing thing, and it's fun because, as I always say, we're in an era where we have new technology at so many different studios' disposal. Why not do something different? Why do we always have to do the same format television show? 45 minutes, or I should say 45 to 52 minutes, or maybe 60 minutes. And then that's the show. First act, second act, third act, fourth act, fifth act. And then the show is done. Why not experiment a little bit with your formatting and have some fun when you have your own network, your own streaming platform, play around. There's no rules for time, there's no commercials you have to worry about. There's no time slots that need to be filled. Play around, have some fun. And that's exactly what Short Treks is. It's the producers having some fun, exploring some territories maybe they had thought about in the writing room and they couldn't get to for whatever reason. And here we are with something that I never knew I needed in my life.
Oh, absolutely. Because like the way that they've portrayed these Short Treks is so important to the expansion of Star Trek as a franchise, because they're taking concepts that they can honestly open up the universe of Star Trek to. They did it with the last season. I mean, we saw how important they were.
Yeah, Dave, you're right. And originally, I think you and I and most of us had thought it was just going to be a Discovery thing. It was going to fill in the blanks with Discovery. But as we know now, it's going to be something that they can use for the Star Trek universe as a whole, as they're calling it now, the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
And I mean, come on. Anytime we can get Star Trek, I'm happy. And anytime we can get some exceptional Star Trek, it makes me that much more happier. And that's exactly what this episode of Short Treks, the season two premiere, did. I mean, it was an exceptional piece of Star Trek. This episode was titled Q&A, and it was written by Michael Chabon and directed by Mark Pellington. And Dave, I have to say that after this episode, Michael Chabon has now removed the question mark above his head. If you are not aware, Michael Chabon is the gentleman that has been put in charge of showrunning duties for the upcoming Picard series.
Yes.
And I feel really good about Michael Chabon taking on showrunning duties at this point, because the dude sure can write an intimate scene filled with glorious subtext. There were so much unsaid moments that were clearly stated, and some that only the hardcore of the hardest fans will get or understand. And if you don't, it doesn't really do anything for you in terms of like disrupting the flow of the show.
Of the flow of the story that's being told. And
because sometimes, Dave, and correct me if I'm wrong or you feel differently, but sometimes when they throw in, you know, relevant Easter eggs, and when I mean Easter eggs, I'm not talking things that anyone could point out, but even things that are, I would call certain, like the issue of, and we'll get into this in a second, with Spock smiling. I mean, that's definitely an Easter egg that goes way back to the original pilot of Star Trek.
Yes.
Things like that, that maybe you never watched the original Star Trek run because it was in the 60s and you're just into like this new era. Well, guess what? It doesn't ruin it for you if you don't know. But for us Star Trek fans, we're sitting back, you know, with our feet up and giggling. Oh, I understand that. That's awesome. It's just a fun way to write an episode. And that's ultimately what I think this episode amounts to. It's a time where a writer who obviously loves Star Trek can fanboy out a bit
and
enjoy himself a bit, you know, exercise his artistry a bit,
and understand that he understands the franchise that he's writing for.
Yes. And I have to say that, obviously, I think it's pretty clear, Dave, that we feel like this was an excellent episode of Short Treks. And I'm hoping moving forward, that we can separate the Trek fan from the reviewer or the critic this week. But I feel like maybe this is one of those rare instances where the Star Trek fan can work with the critic, because honestly, Dave, I do feel like this is an episode that's written very well.
Yeah. It's very well executed.
And as I said, I mean, Dave, it goes to show you what a good writer can do in a very small amount of time. 14 mm-hmm. minutes of just solid story and character development, completely trimmed of fat. It's just a lean, mean story.
Oh yeah. And it was able to do things in a simplistic level. This might sound a little confusing. It did a very simplistic story in a very technical way.
Yeah.
Like
simplistic might be a word that you're not giving me credit,
devaluing.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right. There really is no other way to say that. It is simplistic, but it's a genius simplicity.
There's a beauty behind it because, yeah, like, think about it. You only have this small little scene in a turbo lift, which is even smaller, but between not a entire cast, but two characters.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing thing was, not only were you able to tell a story between two characters, but you were able to tell a story about another character through two characters' interaction. So in
exactly, Dave, two birds with one stone.
Two birds with one stone.
And one of the most natural ways to get two people talking. It isn't like, hey, let's talk a little bit. No, they designed this episode so that the characters had to talk. But not just talk, but also let go of some of their vulnerability. Yes. Two characters that we know, based on Star Trek canon, Spock is the obvious, but also number one, two characters that aren't necessarily with their thoughts and feelings and emotions.
Yeah. For people to understand how I feel about this particular episode, I compare this episode to great tandem scenes that I've seen in films, like the dialogue scene in Heat between Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. Yeah. The Godfather scenes, the monologue between Don Corleone and his group in a small room.
Right.
Stuff like that is what
scenes that the actor has to act.
Yeah.
Where
this is something that basically we as filmmakers desire of this for. Directors want to do stuff like this, where they say, okay, we have this one scene. I have to tell a story in one scene, in one setting between two characters and make it count.
Yeah.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
And I looked at this and I got chills just watching this because, like,
okay, so I'm not the only nerd because I did too.
Because I got the film chills from this episode because I'm like going, a film student, if a brilliant film student would to study this, they can do this.
Well, you can do it, Dave. And that's why I love this episode so much. And I honestly think it's probably the best episode of Short Treks to date. I honestly believe that. And we had some great episodes last season.
We had some great ones.
But because, Dave, it wasn't just fantastic from a Star Trek standpoint or point of view, but also from a filmmaking point of view. I mean, the directing was just fantastic. And we're going to get into that in a moment. But number one, let's talk about the Star Trek aspects. Optimism. Optimistic is how I would define this episode. And how about that, Dave? For all those pessimistic fucks out there who talk trash about this new era of Star Trek, saying, but where's the optimism? Well, this episode was a perfect example of this new era of Star Trek writers who do understand and grasp what Star Trek is about. And what a perfect way to frame that optimism than to use Spock's first day aboard the Enterprise. An ensign's first day aboard a vessel, excited about the new journey. It just makes sense.
Yeah. And the ability to actually see Spock in the very beginning, his complete beginning character growth into who we all as fans grow up in. And it made me smile. I love the fact that Spock, is very logical still, but he's young. And because we just came off of a season that showed that he's half Vulcan, half human, dealing with like these complicated emotions that are inside of him. Yeah, that'd be the one thing. He's smiling. And number one is basically just tells him, I wouldn't smile that much, or I wouldn't, you know, like,
wouldn't show that. I wouldn't reveal that to this crew. Reveal that
to the crew.
Yeah. I mean, well, it makes sense. And having him smile, Dave, I felt was such a nice touch. And it just shows that Michael Chabon understands Star Trek. And also it shows a concerted effort by the producers of Star Trek, including Alex Kurtzman, into correcting some canon issues. Not only does this smile make sense from a story perspective, you know, having this individual half human, half Vulcan smile because he's happy. He's happy that he's got this assignment, that he's where he wants to be. But also it kind of addresses, no, not kind of, it does. It addresses a canon issue that was brought on that wasn't there before, but when they decided to make this original pilot that was never officially a part of canon, but a couple decades now, when they decide to bring this original pilot into canon, now suddenly we have issues. You're dealing with a pilot that was trash. That was not, I don't feel like it's trash.
It was on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, it was never to air. It wasn't going to be the show that launched. It wasn't going to be the episode that launched this show. So there's things there that possibly there were some liberties. We all know how pilots are, especially pilots back then. Today, a lot of pilots are now made to be produced and go directly into production. Just it's the way of the business now. And the typical, hey, we have a pilot and we don't know if we're going to go to a series order and we may make some changes. Yeah, it still exists. But with this new era of streaming, it's just not as a big thing as in years past. But yeah, you would make pilots and chances are that pilot may seduce or whet the appetite of the producers or the studio heads. And they may say, hey, you know what? I like what you have here. We're going to go ahead and buy this series. Most of the time that pilot never sees the light of day.
Yes.
They order the series and you redo it. You start over from scratch. You take the notes that the studio heads might have had for you, and then you move forward from there.
Yeah, so they make their changes.
And you make changes. And that's obviously what happened with the original series. There's been so many interviews with Gene Roddenberry that says as much. The pilot was a no-go, but they did like the idea. So they trashed that pilot. But years later, it became kind of a a thing, you know, it kind of had a cult following. People were intrigued by it. It wasn't as bad as maybe the studios had thought, but when they canonized it, it created some issues like Spock smiling and laughing at times. So by bringing that aspect into this episode and then having number one talk to him about it and the vulnerability aspect of it suddenly makes sense. And they fixed something that was a bit of an issue. Even with you and I think we talked about this during our season two Discovery discussion. I think we actually went into this discussion already about him smiling, how it presents an issue. And yet here in this episode, what do? They retrospectively fix it, I guess you could say.
They retconned it, right? They retconned a retcon. And like when you take a look at it, this episode did so much for the history of Star Trek. It gave insight into not just Spock.
No.
But number one, who has always been a fan favorite.
And yet severely lacking real story.
And Pike getting that conversation by simply asking, and this was amazing. This was a genius maneuver in how to write dialogue. Is if you want people to know about a character, have two characters talk about him. And I thought that that was genius.
Well, especially with the whole Q&A.
Yeah, with the Q&A concept and Spock looking at him, what are the three things you can tell me about Pike? And I was like going, oh my God, they just addressed actually adding to Pike's character.
Yeah, I put that in my notes as one of my favorite moments of the episode because I'll read exactly what was said. This is one, his capacity for hearing out another point of view is exceeded only by his willingness to change his own once he's heard you out. Two, even though he is the most heavily decorated fighting captain in Starfleet, he views resorting to force as an admission of failure. And three, he is utterly unsentimental except when it comes to horses.
And it's amazing to me when just by stating three things about Pike, it literally added more depth to Pike himself.
Yeah, and we can see that. And also it says a lot. And I think it was, even though I loved that little tidbit on Pike, I think it was more about number one because this episode was about fleshing out Spock and number one. And it takes you right back. It makes your eyebrow raise just a bit because when Spock says, oh, you've carefully not monitored. What was his words? You carefully. I have it written down. Hold on here. He's all. You carefully have studied the captain. And she kind of looked at him like, oh, like that's a little embarrassing. But you get the idea that she might have some feelings for him, which again goes right back to the pilot episode. And yes, it was never overt. It was never like stated, but I think we've always got the idea that she has this. Yes, she has a great amount of respect for him. And I think that's the very reason why they never would have a relationship because she respects him too much. It's almost like she puts him on a pedestal. But you get the idea that she might have some feelings there. So I think everything there in this episode, none of it was just wasted. It was all purposely stated to flesh out these two characters that were strategically placed in a turbo lift together. And again, I feel like the biggest theme that really kept this episode together was vulnerability. Yes. This was the single greatest episode, in my opinion, for Star Trek when it comes to number one. The story behind her name, the whole mystery behind her character was not intentional, but the genius of this episode made it a part of her character. The mystery, as I said, it was never meant to be intentional, the mystique around her name. She was a character that was in a pilot that never seen the light of day until years later. And because of that, her character shrouded a mystery. We don't know much about her. Even during season two of Discovery, she was very reserved. We didn't know much about her. And suddenly, after this episode, we understand why she's reserved.
Yeah.
We understand the issues of vulnerability. And suddenly, this mystery is still definitely,
it's still there.
It's still there, but now we've taken a peek behind that curtain and we can kind of understand her that much more. I mean, look at the desperation when the turbo lift finally got fixed, or they when they came to get them out of the turbo lift. And what did she say? There was desperation in her eyes when she told Spock, please do not ever tell anyone about this. Not only does this solidify their relationship as friends and, you know, something that I'm sure will go on for years as this strong bond between the two of them because they've shared an intimate moment with each other, but also it says 1,000 words about who she is and her own potential insecurities as a person.
Without ruining the mystique of number one.
Yep.
That's what I loved about it was like, it was like, I always was like kind of cringing when it felt like they were going to come out and say, this is her name. And it's like, no, you guys don't understand. Her name is number one. It will always be number one.
It's Una.
And yeah, it was like all of a sudden when Spock says that, I'm like, no, don't do it. Don't. That's not it. And like, I like the fact that with this episode, we were able to get insight into a character without ruining their mystique.
No, nope.
You know how hard is.
It's very hard because
how many times in fandoms have we seen insight into that mysterious character? I'm going to throw this out there. Like, say Wolverine.
Uh-huh.
Wolverine, you ruin the mystique by giving him a full backstory, and suddenly that mystique is gone.
Well, yeah, you're not as interested.
You're not interested at him.
Yeah, once you find out a little too much, and they manage to, you know, skate that line. You know, hey, you know what? We're gonna give you some needed background, but we're not gonna overdo it. We're gonna keep her interesting. We're gonna keep that mystique there. And I mean, they did a great job.
And the beautiful thing is, they skated that line not clumsily, like you would expect. Like,
no,
people
it
would
was
be
well
teetering.
Thought out.
It was a surgical strike as a writer to all of a sudden just go, no, we're going to go nice little waves right here, go a little curves here, and then we'll turn it in a nice, tight narrative bow.
Yeah, nice, mostly nice little curves around her booty. And
oh, man, Rebecca Romijn.
She's a keeper.
She is a keeper.
I love her. I would be asking her 20 questions as well. The turbo lift mic. Can we make love?
By the end of it, she's like, going, I need to get out of here. I need to get out of here now. Wait. I'm not done yet.
Yeah. The pacing was great. It felt like a full episode. I can't believe this episode is 14 minutes. As I said at the top of the show, it goes to show you what a good writer can do.
Do you know what for me, I have it here in my notes. To me, this felt like a very well done Next Generation type episode.
Well, Dave, because Next Generation is arguably one of the most Star Trek we've gotten, and that's what this episode was. This was so fucking Star Trek, and
it
I know
so
we
Star
say
Trek.
That a lot, and I hate when we say that. Oh, it's so Star Trek, because what does that really mean? You know, but I think most Star Trek fans would understand when we say that because, Dave, this did. I mean, from the score to the choice directing shots, everything about this episode satisfied me as a Star Trek fan. And getting into the directing choices just for a moment here, even the directing, Dave, the choices that they chose to go with for some of the shots were very appropriate to what the character should be feeling. When they within the opening minutes of the episode and they showed that camera around Spock, it gave us this sense of immersion, that he was immersed in this joy, this optimism as he's going aboard the Enterprise. And we felt and shared those feelings with him because of the excellent choices in directing.
Yeah.
Dave, let's just rate this now. Maybe we need to fill people in here, but during our summer break, if you don't listen to the rest of the network, Rayman Digital has put together a scoring system, much like Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic. Across this network, we now have our own rating system, and we call it the Rayman Digital Review Score System, and it goes from 1 to 40% would be considered a terrible movie, TV, comic, book, whatever, it would be thumbs down. Get fisted. 41 to 70% is it's a movie. It's an average. It's good. It's not bad. It's not great. It's not cutting edge. It's not innovative, but it's all right. It's entertaining. 71 to 90% is hell yeah. Thumbs up. Generally good stuff here. 91 to 100% is kick ass. Devil horns. It's really good. It's near perfect. So, Dave, that being said, what's your percentage you give this episode of Short Treks Q&A?
Prepare for history, Mike.
Okay.
This is my first 100%.
Come on.
It's 100%. I'm sorry. When I watched this, it hit all the great notes.
It hit all walls.
It hit all the walls.
Yeah.
It hit every single vibe for me. It says a lot that basically after this.
How excited are you now for Picard?
I'm
more so.
I'm super excited.
Now that you know this guy that this wrote guy this can episode. Do it.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah.
This episode does so much for me, not just as a Star Trek fan, but as a filmmaking fan, because just like what we alluded to, we can go on and on about like the directing choices and the cinematography choices they chose. All of them hit their target. And that is really rare. It's really rare for me to actually see because I'm a big critic of short films because I've seen a lot of them. But
they're so hard to do.
This arguably, if I were to teach
the right way, I should say.
If I were to teach a class or even talk to students again and filmmaking, I would use this as an example.
You're right.
Because
this is something that needs to be shown to film students. I mean, they showed us so many short films when we went to film school years back, and yeah, they were great, but you're right. This is a perfect example of how to write and direct a short film.
A short film. I would tell students basically take two characters, one scene. How many times have I heard that?
And no pornos.
Yeah. And just make it count. Make me believe in your characters.
Yeah. All right. So you give a 100%.
100.
Okay.
I think if you were to check, I think that's my first one.
It is your first one. All right, Dave. I just can't give it 100% because I feel like it would take away from that 100% spot. Because I was pretty close to, I'm going to give this a 98.
You're going to pull back 2 points. But what are the 2 points off? Why 2 points off?
Just because I feel like. I don't want to take away from the prestige of that 100%. I feel like if we're so too quick to give 100%, it takes away from it when it really is something great. And honestly, Dave, I do feel like this is great, and I would possibly give it 100%. I don't think I've given anything even a 90 yet.
No, you haven't given anything a 90. That's why this is special. I think anybody listening to us right now about this
episode, I'm going
to
give it a 98. I'm taking away 2 points because there wasn't enough boob shots.
There's not enough curve.
I wanted Spock and number one to get it on
the top.
That is true. That is true. And if this was the 1800s, it'd be enough to get me off.
And come on, if you see number one unzip her top, that should be enough.
Jesus, Dave, you're ruining all of our credibility is going right out the window. 98%.
Okay, I can definitely, but I stick to mine. It's 100. This is an.
I'm not going to disagree with you. 98% is the highest grade. I think 98 and 100% are both the highest grade. I think any critic/reviewer has given anything on this network yet.
I mean, if you're a Star Trek fan and you don't walk away from this episode smiling, something's wrong with you.
Exactly, Dave. I was smiling. I had nerd goosebumps.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm giving it a 98%, though, because how much of this was just perfect Star Trek opposed to a perfectly written film? You get what I'm saying? That's why I said at the top of the show, I don't know if I can separate the Star Trek fan from the critic when it comes to this specific episode, because to me, as a Star Trek piece, it's perfect.
Yeah.
So I'm just deducting 2% just to take into account my fanboyness.
That's understandable.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, this concludes this discussion. We will be here again next week with another discussion on the next Short Treks. And then, of course, we'll be back again each what is it, every second Thursday of the month leading up into the premiere of Picard, right?
Picard. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Lots of goodness coming our way in terms of Star Trek. All right. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.